The world is at present passing through a crisis. The old civilization is crumbling to pieces. There is going on a reshuffling of the values of life. The lesson that the present situations hold for mankind is that unbridled lust for power and possession leads to strife and war, that selfishness, greed, and pride, whether among individuals or nations, cause widespread suffering and misery. Out of the travails through which the world is passing, a new order is bound to emerge based on a knowledge of the universal spirit. But this cannot be achieved by efforts of politicians, diplomats, and administrators, whose vision is warped by narrow considerations of personal, national, and racial self-interest. The transformation can be brought about only by divinely inspired saints and sages who have experienced the universal vision of truth or God, who are perfectly selfless and whose hearts are ever filled with love for all. Love limited to one's country, loyalty confined to one's race, religion, or community, attachment to one's family and identification of self with one's body are all alike the offspring of ignorance, which confines us in a cage of smaller or bigger dimensions. To fling oneself into the infinite expanse of the divine is the work of heroes. Immortality is the birthright of mankind. The teachings of the ancient rishis clearly shows that ignorance of the one all-pervading truth, whose nature is pure bliss, is the root cause of fear, strife, and misery. I'll read that again. The teachings of the ancient rishis clearly show that ignorance of the one all-pervading truth, whose nature is pure bliss, is the root cause of fear, strife, and misery. International conflicts, religious wrangles, social injustices, economic exploitations, and political tyrannies are all found in the ultimate analysis to spring from selfishness born of the failure to realize the unity and universality of the Spirit. All world teachers unanimously declare, O man, if you want peace for yourself and others in the world, adjust your conduct in accordance with the law of love. Expand your vision so that it can embrace all fellow beings and link them to yourself by love. Rise above narrow creeds, cults, communal leanings, and national ambitions. Merge your life in the infinity of God. Papa's words ring so true, not only now, but seemingly always. They have been the one words that have come down through time. Jesus' teachings, Mohammed teachings, all the great ones, the Buddha, have all started with that innate purity. But the moment that things are brought down from spirit into the mind, and the mind forms words, and then a listening mind forms its own ideas, it's bound to get misinterpreted. It's bound to find its way into misuse. We see that time and time again. The only cure is that each new generation stands up and proclaims its freedom in the unity of spirit, that each new generation brings about a renewed vision of life that incorporates this universal vision. It can't be according to any particular religion, it can't be according to any particular organization, because it will always go through distortions. This is inevitable because people are not alike in realization. But to focus our life in such a way that we come to that universal vision, that we see God in one and all, then it is like one link of a chain being lifted up out of the water. And with that one link is linked to other links of the chain. And they are all pulled up by the one link. So when you rise up, when you make the effort, when you go beyond the limitations of the human consciousness and going to the divine, you are lifting up all mankind with you. Whether you are a teacher, whether you are a hermit, whether you speak to millions or whether you speak to none, it makes no difference because it is a thing of consciousness. There is power in that. And there is far more power in that than there is in the superfluous words that are spoken every day that are not rooted in truth, even if they are well-meaning. So it is up to each one of us to really get to work and to go and get our complete and total God realization. It's only in this way that this world will change. We want to impose change as if a political leader or a party has a solution for everyone. This cannot be because it does not include the realization of God as the all in all. That can be the only party. That can be the only ideology because it leads to each individual's realization. Religion can never be the memorization of texts or of going and reading through vast volumes of books. That does not bring realization. Only by going inside the laboratory of your own soul can you get that. And that's not an easy task, as we all know, those of us who are practicing this. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna gives some very practical advice for the successful practice of yoga. Now, yoga is not just simply a set of exercises that is set out. This is something that has gotten hold, and it's not a bad thing. But really, it's a simple preparation for what's to come. The exercises help to balance the body and make it physically healthy. And then it helps to balance the energy. And that is all focused so that when you sit down to meditate, that you are able to really focus your attention on God alone. Now here's what Krishna says in the Gita. He starts out, this is all about meditation, free from ever-hoping desires and from cravings for possessions, with the heart, waves of feeling, or chitva, controlled by the soul, by yoga concentration, retiring alone to a quiet place. The yogi should constantly try to unite with the soul. So it starts out by saying, set aside the things of the world. Set aside your preoccupations with your worries or your hopes or your desires. This is time for communion with God. Make it a quiet place so that you can go inside and you can really focus your attention. He goes on to say, the yogi's seat in a clean place should be firm, not wobbly, neither too high nor too low, and covered first with kusha grass, and then with deer skin or tiger skin, then with a cloth. Now, kusha grass repels ants, so there's a practical reason for putting the grass there, is because it keeps the little critters from crawling all over you, which can distract you. And then you put a deer or tiger skin. Now, we use wool and a wool blanket, and it does the same thing, because they guard against the worldly vibration and gravitational force of this world. This whole world has consciousness. And of course, the consciousness of the world is primarily focused upon being the world itself. So it's constantly tugging you, not just in gravity, but also in consciousness. So this wool, or a tiger skin, or a lion skin, has proven to be successful in blocking that pull from the worldly vibrations. And then with a cloth, so you are comfortable. Established on that seat, concentrating the mind on one point, controlling the activities of the fanciful faculty, the chitwa, the feeling, the power that visualizes, and the senses, let him practice yoga for self-purification. So now you're set. You've set aside this time. You've withdrawn the energy inside of yourself. You're not focused on the things of this world. I remember somebody once said, you know, it's better for me to come to your talks because when I listen to them on the computer, I get distracted. Well, I'm actually surfing the net while I'm listening to your talk. So, of course, she's not going to get the same kind of an effect that when you sit down and you close your eyes and you focus. And my eyes automatically close when I go to talk or I go to meditate. My eyes, my attention, rolls up to the ajna. I don't even think about it anymore. It just happens. And my whole attention goes inside. It's no longer focused on the world or even the things of the world. It is the feeling of God. It is the presence of God, the power of God. These are the things that are filling my mind and my awareness. And this is what happens when you successfully switch off the things of this world and you focus completely and totally upon God alone. In the beginning, we struggle with it, and it's because we're so used to being dominated by this world. We're not used to immersing ourselves in the presence of God. So the moment we close our eyes, we start thinking about the things of this world. We don't do the very first thing that Krishna said, which is to set aside the things of the world. So this is the first priority. We have to learn how to concentrate. Master talked about concentration in the lessons, and he said the successful practice of anything at all in this world requires good concentration. You must be able to focus this mind on what it is you're trying to accomplish. Otherwise, it becomes spread out. You can compare it to the power of a laser versus that of a prism. A prism can be pretty, but it has no power to it. And a prism catches the light and it spreads a rainbow all around. But when it comes to power, you want laser, you want a focus light. And so we want to focus our mind because we want to make it powerful in going to God. Otherwise, it all gets splayed out in different directions. And we don't get anywhere. So we have to take ourselves in hand. We have to really talk to ourselves and say, listen, what am I doing here with this meditation time? Am I serious about this? Am I going to focus this mind? And we can implore and ask for God's aid in doing this. And it's much, much easier to focus your mind on something that you really know. So you ask God to come in His presence. Because then you're focusing on what it is that you're striving for. Otherwise, it's just the power of negation. Not this, not that. I don't want to think about this. I don't want to think about that. This is not time to be thinking about work or about relationships or all the other millions of things that can crowd in on us. It's time to focus on God. So we must take ourselves in hand and really learn to focus our attention. Now Krishna continues, firmly holding the spine, neck, and head erect and motionless. This is important for a couple of reasons. One is when your spine and your neck and your head are all held erect, it allows the energy to flow smoothly through your spine. You'll also notice that your internal organs are not being crowded. If you slump, then your organs are being pushed in upon by your chest and your lungs and so on from the things above. So when you straighten up and lift up, and so you think of when you sit on your kusha grass and your lion skin, and you sit up erect, you focus first at the base of the spine. This is the base from which you are operating. And so you plant that, so to speak. And then you lift up in the sternum, that place just where your ribs spread apart in front of you. And you lift that up. And then you feel almost as if there is a string at the top of your head that's slightly lifting up your head. Now your spine and your neck and your head are all in perfect alignment. Now many of us are not used to sitting up like this. We're used to slouching. So in the beginning it takes practice, but after a while you get the hang of it and it feels good. And you can use pillows and other kinds of things to help get you in the right position so that you're not straining yourself too much. Master allows for all of that. Firmly holding the spine, neck, and head erect and motionless, let the yogi focus his eyes at the starting place of the nose, the point between the two eyebrows, the ajna. Let him not gaze around in various directions. So just learn to let your attention focus upon the ajna, breathing calmly, coolly, not concentrating too hard so that you're giving yourself a headache, and not too loose so that your attention is wandering. Find that sweet spot, right where your focus is upon the ajna. You may feel there, especially as the energy is beginning to awaken, a kind of pressure. Or sometimes it can be a tingling vibration that's there at the ajna. And let that be your focus of attention. Just breathing with it, focusing upon the ajna. You may also feel at the same time that there's a pressure at the back of your head, at the base of your skull. And this is the medulla. This is the mouth of God through the divine life forces flowing into you. All this becomes active, and it's wonderful. It's all signs that you're making progress. With serenity and fearlessness, with steadfastness in brahmachari, with the mind controlled, with the thoughts centered on me, the yogi should sit meditating on me as the final goal. So he starts out with serenity and fearlessness. So we start out, we're not afraid to open ourselves up to God. We know that God is our well-wisher, our friend, the one who is wishing us success in this endeavor. That God is looking out after us. We have nothing to be afraid of. Sometimes we can hear the descriptions of different ones who have gone the way, and it can make us actually afraid of going the way because we hear how severe it was for Papa or for Master or for Mother. And we think to ourselves, I'm not Papa, I'm not Master, I'm not Mother. And I'd be crushed if some of those things happened to me. I wouldn't be able to make it. But each individual's path has similarities, and that is the way of the cross and the Christ. But it also has variations, and each path is absolutely exactly true for that individual. So there's nothing to be afraid of. If you have to face something, it's something from your past. It's something that you have already done. It's something that's residing in the subconscious, in the basement of your own mind. So you already have it. You already know it. There's nothing to be afraid of in that. You've already done it. And you're still living now, you're still existing, you're still functioning, and you've been carrying it around with you all of these many years. Wouldn't it be a relief to let it go, to be done with it, then no longer have it there. This is what this is all about. You face things so that you can release them. You don't face them as punishment. You don't face them so that you can get immersed in them once again and get embroiled all over again into the same drama. That's not the point. The point is you're here to get your freedom. And so you sit in serenity and fearlessness with steadfastness in Brahmacharya. Now, Brahmacharya is that lifting up of the life force through the spine. Sometimes it's the focus of sex energy. But it's really all materialism, all the things of the lower chakras. And you think of your spine as being an open channel. You can visualize it that way, as this is wide open channel. And the energy flows easily and smoothly up through the spine. It goes to the higher centers, and as you experience them in the higher centers, you feel a power, you feel a joy, you feel an upliftment and a purity. And that's what Brahmacharya is. It's the learning to reverse the life force from being guided down into the lower senses and the lower chakras and reversing it and lifting it up. And when you do, you experience that freedom that you've been looking for all of your life. Only you didn't know it. You thought that you would get it through accomplishing something in this world. And yet this world disappoints us again and again and again, and still we look for getting our fulfillment from this world. It can never deliver. It can never deliver. It was never meant to be able to deliver. It was meant to be a kind of entertainment, but not the completeness and the fulfillment of yourself. You see how far we have gone wrong. So you see that spinal passageway opening up bright and smooth, flowing life energy, naturally lifting up and feeling the purity and expansiveness. You can compare and contrast any experience in this world, whether it is meeting the love of your life, getting the fulfillment of financial success or worldly success that you have always wanted, whatever it might be. And then you compare it to that uplifted state in God. And you quickly see there is no comparison, because the world cannot compete with God. It can never be your fulfillment. It can never be your completeness. It will never fulfill your heart's desire. Never. You will get happiness, but it will always be temporary. And it will always alternate with some form of loss. This is its nature. And every time we encounter a loss in this world, we should let it inform us. Aha, let me not get too attached to this world or attached at all. Because it always comes around to this. Every time I think I've gained something, then I lose it. And I may keep it for quite some time, but I always lose it. Because I never can keep what this world gives to me. It is impossible. So let us practice that steadfastness in Brahmacharya and lifting up all the life force with the mind controlled, so your mind is focused. And as I say, it's easier to focus on something positive than it is simply to be a naysayer, not this, not that. So focus on the beauty of God, the love of God, the light of God, the bliss of God, the peace of God. Make it positive. And in whatever way is the easiest for you to connect with God, do that. And focus upon that. The yogi should sit meditating on me as the final goal, centered on me. Now, Krishna here is not speaking as an individual. He's speaking as the divine consciousness within you. So you're meditating upon the divinity within your own self. the freedom, the beauty, the power. It's all within you. Then he continues, the self-governed yogi, he whose mind is fully under control, thus engaging his soul in ceaseless meditative union with spirit, attains the peace of my being, the final nirvana, deliverance. So you see, he lays it all out here for you. And sometimes we think, and it is sometimes because of the way that things have been presented. What I would like to say is that God realization is something less than what you think, and it's definitely more than what you think. But I will say it's different than what you think. Because what you think is simply the mind's conception of what you hope and what you believe God will be. But the truth is, you cannot know that reality until you fully experience it for yourself. So you remain open. There's something called transitional metaphors. Transitional metaphors are, you use an idea or an image as a means for getting free of something. So for instance, you might use the form of Jesus, or of Krishna, or of Hanuman, or the innumerable other images and forms of gods and goddesses, knowing that each are an expression of the universal consciousness, but none of them are universal consciousness itself. Because the mind thinks in subject and object, we focused upon an object. We ourselves are the subject. And we focus our minds upon an object because that's how our minds operate. So we think of God as light, but we're not actually encountering the light in the beginning. Or we think of God as peace. We may have a little inkling of peace, but it's not the universal peace that comes with realization. Rather, it's a transitional metaphor. It's a means and a way to get where we're going. Even those who think that they practice no image worship, you know, there are certain religions, they destroy the statues and the different things that have been created down through time because they think that that's image worshiping, but they image worship as well until they have totally realized God because that's how the mind operates. Now, God wants us to go beyond the things of the mind, but we utilize the mind until we get there. There is the story of the man who was walking down the path and he got a thorn in his foot. It was deeply embedded. He couldn't get it out no matter how much he tried. A saint was walking down the road and he said, I'll help you, my son. And he looked around and he saw another large thorn. And he used the thorn to dig out the other thorn. The meaning of this story is we use thoughts to free us from thoughts. The thoughts that we use are a mantra, are a image of God, are the stories of God, and they help to extract us from the mind. So we use a thorn to dig out the thorn. And once the thorn is dug out, we throw away both thorns because they're no longer needed or wanted. So this is what we do in meditation. We use a thought in order to transcend thoughts. It may sound counterintuitive with just hearing about it like that, but once you experience it and you're chanting Ram Nam, or you're repeating Hang Sa, and then you are lifted up into that higher state, and when you are, your breath slows down, maybe it comes to a complete stop. Your mind becomes totally centered and focused. There's nothing else for you except for that divine presence. You have gone beyond thought, beyond conception. You now merge yourself into the spirit and divine consciousness. You are pure bliss. You are pure light. You are the joy that God is. You are the wisdom thoughts that God thinks. He doesn't even think, really. in the way that we do, that we reason. His thoughts are. They simply are. They have been from the beginning of time. And they will always be. And they are true. True beyond all conception. And so these things become ours because we are spirit and spirit has become us. We are no longer a human being in the traditional sense, but we are filled with divine consciousness. And as a result of that, we feel the fulfillment of the heart's desires. We feel the balance of life come into being right within our own selves. Now, outwardly, things may not have changed one iota, but inwardly, everything has changed. So you see, Krishna here has taken us through all the steps of attaining. It's an abbreviated form. And as we know, there's a battle that ensues. And he knows that. He says at another place in the Gita that it's not easy to tame the mind. So even he acknowledges that. And if it were not for grace, what is it that is grace that comes in? It is that divine presence that so fills us up. It fills our heart, our soul, our mind. And it lifts us up and it changes us and transforms us. We make the effort and we must make the effort. We must, or nothing else happens. Because we ourselves have closed the door, we ourselves must open the door. But what do we open the door to? To grace. The power, the intelligence, the everythingness of all that God is. And that comes pouring in through that door. It's always been there. It's not that God has withheld grace from us. It's we have withheld ourselves from grace. Because we wanted to do it our own way. And when we find out eventually, that doing it our own way doesn't do it at all, then we turn ourselves over to God. So become very focused on the divine presence when you go into meditation. Don't think, oh, I just have 20 or 30 minutes to meditate or 40 minutes to meditate. Think, I stand on the edge of eternity, and all of that which is God may be revealed to me at any moment, at any time. And here I am. I'm making myself 100% available to that. I am fearless as I stand on the edge of eternity. And you don't know what God will give you in that moment. And you can't even really judge it because God can come in the whisper of a soft breeze that just barely brushes over the petals of a flower. So sweet and so subtle. Or he may come as a hurricane that dashes everything of your world into and pummels it into dust, so that you might be made perfect for God. Or it can come as anything in between. You don't know. You can't guess. You just simply open yourself in that moment. And you know that in touching any part of God, you touch all of God. As Mother so wonderfully said, when I stand on this world with my two feet, I am connected with the whole world. Who thinks that way? Mother does. And you stand with your two feet on the ground and you touch the earth and you are connected with the entirety of the earth. When you touch God in any form, when that presence comes to you, you are connected with the entirety of God. So it may feel very subtle to you. It may feel very quiet to you. That's all right. Keep your mind focused exactly there. And that will take you into the entirety of everything that God is. It may be a whisper of peace. It may be a subtle joy that begins to well up inside of you. It may be a light that you see up at the crown chakra or at the ajna. Anything at all. Any touch at all. And you are now connected with the entirety of everything that God is. That is infinity. So you truly do stand on the precipice of eternity, right on the edge. Isn't that a wonderful thing? And that God can reveal everything to you in a flash. Swami Vishwananda talked about how the Gita was written, and people will say, well, it's so much text, and it's supposed to happen out on a battlefield, and how is that possible? And he says, it's like this. You're sitting in a dark room, and somebody just flicks the light on and off. And in that moment, you see everything in the room. You see the chairs, the people. You see everything in that room in that one flash. He says, that's the way it is with God. God can just give you a flash and you see everything. Isn't that a wonderful idea? A wonderful concept. So you're open to that. You're open to any way that God comes. You don't prescribe to God how he comes. I remember one time feeling such a wonderful feeling of presence of God and thinking to myself, I want it to be like this all the time. And that was the seed of it to disappear right then, because that's a kind of attachment. It's a spiritual attachment, but it's still attachment. And the moment you try to grasp something with your hand, just think of it. You grasp something with your hand. Your hand is no longer open in receptivity. It's now closed. And that's why attachment to anything, even a spiritual experience, even a certain kind of presence of God, it actually cuts you off from the presence of God. Because your hand is no longer open to receive. It is now clasping and closed. So we must relax the fingers, relax the hand, make it receptive once again. So with this topic in mind, and thinking about this, are there any questions, any thoughts, observations by any of you around this topic or any other part of your spiritual journey? If you speak up, I can hear you.
Okay. Often when I try to meditate, the pain in my back and neck and shoulders is really distracting. And that's been giving a lot of problems lately.
Yeah. We get blockages, and many of them come in very almost physical ways along the spine. And I remember for years I had what felt like to me a stone in my throat. And at other times the energy would be coming up through the spine and I could feel exactly where the knotted point was. So if you think of that as being, okay, that's where my energy is being knotted up, tied up. There's something from my past, there's something in my consciousness. It's keeping it from moving easily and smoothly up through the spine. And then I want your mind to go exactly where that tension is. And just breathe with it. And what by that I mean, when you breathe in, it slightly contracts. And when you breathe out, it slightly expands. So it's just like your lungs. You breathe in, slightly contracts. You breathe out, it slightly expands. And just breathe like that 5 or 7 times. And as you're breathing with that part and it's breathing with you, I want you to just imagine that it's like a knot that's gotten really tight in there. And of its own accord, it's just loosening. If you can imagine having a knot in a rope, and if it's really cinched down tight, it's really tough to get it started, to get it unloosened. But somehow, just by breathing with it, it's loosening up, it's softening, which allows it to begin to unravel, unloosen. And just as you practice breathing with that part and it's breathing with you, and then you see it softening and loosening, and then opening to the flow of life energy through your spine, just what do you notice? Yes. When else?
I actually don't have any pain tonight, but in most of the time when I go to meditate, I'm having a lot of pain.
Okay. Why are you not? You've been meditating, so why are you not having it tonight, do you imagine?
I'm not sure.
Uh-huh. Okay. Okay. So another way to do it is to imagine a time recently when you've had that pain. You're not having it currently, but just remember last night or whenever that was, and that you were having that pain. Do you have that in your mind now?
Yeah.
Okay. Now I want you to do the same practice. I want you, as you breathe very naturally, nothing exaggerated, as you breathe in and your lungs expand, that knotted up energy in your spine, it just slightly expands. So you're imagining that if it was last night or whenever it was last that you had that, you're just imagining that you're doing it then. And as you breathe out, it slightly contracts. So it's breathing with you. And then you just notice a softening and a loosening of that knotted up area. Just very gradually, very naturally, not forcing anything. Just more inviting it to loosen. And you're breathing with it and it's breathing with you. So as you imagine a time when you've had that, can you imagine during that time that you're working with it like that, how do you imagine it responding to you?
Letting go.
Say that again, please.
Letting go.
Uh-huh. So that's a way that you can work with that area or any knotted up area. And just keep working with it until it will resolve itself as it softens, as it loosens. The energy will get released. What's happening is that there's a conflict going on at that spot. And it's creating this knotted up point. And the pressure of the upcoming energy meeting that knotted area can create a lot of pain for you, as you know. And so you're going to help it. You're going to help it what it's naturally trying to do on its own, but it's not getting there because it seems like there are opposing forces. And you're just going to work with it, and you're going to breathe with it. You're going to see it softening and loosening until it's completely unloosened. There's no more knot there. And you can, and things that feel very physical, you can actually work through them in this way. And suddenly, it's gone, and it doesn't come back. Now, it may not happen just in one time or two times, but any time that that knotted up area comes back, then just work with it, breathe with it. That you breathe out, it contracts, you breathe in, it expands. You're breathing with it, it's softening, it's loosening. I worked with many things like this.
Thank you.
My great joy. Anyone else?
Yeah, I have something at the end of the day. Well, after getting Matthew to sleep, I feel tired.
Mm-hmm.
All day, doing all the activities of the day.
Right.
And then I get to the meditation time, and I just feel like laying down and resting for a moment, and then I'm just asleep till like 2 a.m.
Right. Right.
And then if I stay up and just get through that, I usually do pretty well. But then in the morning, I'm tired.
Right.
Those are the times I can spend to myself to get deeper into meditation. I was just wondering if you had any suggestions on sleep or reducing my hours of sleep. I'm concerned about reducing them too much because then I feel tired.
Right. Let me ask you this. If you knew that somebody was going to come to the door when you sit down to meditate, and they were going to bring you $10,000 as a gift, would you be asleep?
Probably not.
a little excited. And lots of energy. Why? Because we're anticipating getting something beneficial, something wonderful, something helpful. And when we sit down with God, many times we just start thinking, oh, I just start getting relaxed, and next thing I know, I get the dippy ducks, you know, when my head goes down and snaps back up and goes back and forth. We are not really anticipating getting something wonderful. If there were a treasure that's inside of you that's worth billions of dollars, you'd be quite excited about that. You couldn't wait to get there. So it's our anticipation. Now, we can open ourselves to life force. So what I'd like you to do is do a thought experiment. And yes, you can do it with me now. And as you imagine, it's a legitimate thing. You know, you've worked hard all day long. You're getting Matthew down. It's been a long day. And it's been, a lot has gone on. And so you think, I need some time to sleep. I need some time to rest here. And so when you do that, unconsciously, we start closing in and closing down the life force that's flowing into us. That's what the nature of sleep is. We withdraw the energy. It's much like meditation in a way, only we're doing it unconsciously. We're withdrawing the life energy from the body, and unconsciously we're doing it, and we're releasing ourselves from body consciousness. So it has a similarity to meditation, only it's being done unconsciously rather than consciously. So as you sit to meditate, and you're thinking on, oh, I've had all of these things, and I'm doing all these things, and it's getting late at night, and so on. And you can just feel yourself shutting down. And I want you to reverse that. I want you, all along your spine and your brain, I want you to feel that it's opening. It's not closing down. It's beginning to open. And life force is beginning to flow into you. And into any part of your body that, in particularly, that feels tired, that feels maybe a little bit put upon, like there's an awful lot that's resting on your shoulders, all of that, I want you to feel that life energy streaming into you, and particularly to any parts that are feeling particularly tired or sore, painful. And just as you breathe, you're opening and you're opening more and more and feeling that life energy flow into you. Not only your body, but it's also flowing into your brain. And it's bringing fresh vitality. It's baptizing you in life energy and life force. And as you breathe with that and you open to that, how would you imagine that affecting you in that moment?
I can imagine the feeling of sleepiness would be gone.
Yeah.
I know it's all in my head because I pull up in my car with Matthew after driving him to sleep and start to feel tired.
Right.
It's almost a trained response, like Pavlov, dogs.
Right.
Weird.
Right, yeah. Your body's all geared for it. Matthew's going to sleep, why shouldn't you?
Exactly. No, that's really good. I know that will work because after the Laker treat, my sleep wasn't a problem for like a month. I couldn't sleep at all. So charged up for the retreat.
I remember so many years ago when I was driving truck, and I'd drive all the way through the night, and it would be 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 3:30. Kind of tough times to be awake, but you better be awake. Got 80,000 pounds that you got charge of. And I would want to go to sleep so badly. And then I began to think, you know, nighttime is my daytime. And what is 1 o'clock in the afternoon to somebody else is my 1 o'clock in the morning. It's actually my 1 o'clock in the afternoon. It's my 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It's my 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And by making that little mental switch, one is I let go of my resentment because I used to think, well, everybody else is home. Everybody else is sleeping. And I'm up and I have to be awake and I, you know, how the mind can go with that. And so I just say, this is my noon at midnight. This is my 1 o'clock in the afternoon at 1 a.m. and so on. And just doing that little mental switch, I suddenly was awake. I didn't have that compulsion to go to sleep. It's amazing how powerful the mind is. So work with yourself to find out and say, but I'm going to be tired tomorrow. Why is that? Because we programmed ourselves to be tired tomorrow. And we start closing down the life force when we get to that visualized moment tomorrow. And we think, I'm so tired. I just can't keep my eyes open. And we ourselves are controlling the life force. And we ourselves are closing it down. So you think, I have plenty of life force. It's always flowing to me. There's an unlimited amount of it. How do the yogis stay awake 24/7? Some of them do. And how can they possibly do that without going crazy? Without dying. And it's because they've learned how to access this. Now, I'm not suggesting that anybody try to stay awake 24/7. But we can work with this. And we can begin to open up that life energy at times when we had normally close it down. And look at your attitudes. Look at, oh, I'm going to be so tired in the morning. Why? Why not awake? Why not ready? Why not with plenty of life force, unlimited life force flowing to you? And you begin to visualize that. And sure enough, the next day, you're going along and the thought temptation comes, oh, I should be tired. Why? And you see that all along your spine, your brain, you see it soften and open, and the life force flowing to you. And suddenly you feel awake and ready. Isn't that wonderful? And we find out that many of the things that we have taken as truths is not the truth at all. It's something that we have programmed into our own mind and we've accepted from the world around us or because of our own programming from past lives. So we let go of fear around sleep. Say, God, when you arrange for it, I will sleep and I will rest. In the meantime, you are unlimited life energy. And you are flowing to me all the time. And my part is to remain open to it and not close it down. So now you visualize pulling up with Matthew and the little tykes is fast asleep in the back seat. And you feel this wide open life energy and you say, this is my time to be with God. The world has no more demands upon me. I am now going to put myself in completely with God. And I'm looking forward to it. It's fun. It's interesting. I stand upon the edge of eternity. And everything that God is suddenly comes within the purview of my being. And what's more exciting, more adventurous, more enlivening than that? And suddenly you are. You're awake and you're ready. So take it and work with it. Find the truth for you in there, where that can be true for you as well, for everyone. It's so lovely being with you all. My pranam to the light within you. And take the remembrance of God with you always. Sit in your meditation asana. Straight spine, neck, and head. Standing on the edge of eternity, knowing that everything that is God may come to you in the flash of a moment. Om Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Ram. Victory to God, victory to the light. Blessings to you all.
Thank you, David
G. My great joy.